there. It is time for another episode of the NBA Showdown League podcast. Today, my goal is to catch you up on season two. Yep, we're running it back. We are doing another full season, 132 games, with brand new teams, 12 brand new teams. So we inserted a few additional parameters for the creation of these teams so that we would get completely unique teams all over again. So my first sort of stipulation to add was that I didn't want more than two players who have been teammates in season one to be teammates again in season two. So it was permissible to have two guys who had played together on the same team, but if I had three, we tossed out the team and tried to create another. And yeah, that was an additional headache to add to a number of headaches. If you want to know all of the parameters, you can definitely go back and check out the third blog post from earlier this year. But that addition didn't end up being too much to handle. The algorithm that Matt has was still able to put out, I believe, 11 out of the 12 teams satisfactorily, and we just had to hand tailor one last one. The other additional parameter that I wanted this time around was to include some guys that hadn't gotten to be in season one, namely some guys who were printed at what was in the collecting world deemed rare. Wizards of the Coast, around this time, with all of their trading card games, started implementing small symbols on the cards to represent what rarity the card is. In Magic, they started doing this in, I believe, 1998 by changing the color of the expansion symbol. In Pokemon, they had been doing it from the start of the game, using a circle for a common and a star for a rare, as well as a diamond for an uncommon. It kind of became standard practice going forward for most trading card games. In fact, I would venture to say all started incorporating some kind of a way for people to visually recognize their rare cards. This was, you know, kind of a way to prevent people from trading away their higher value cards without knowing that they were their higher value cards. Anyway, in NBA Showdown, there are just two rarities. There are guys printed at rare, that's mostly the stars, and guys printed at common, and that's everything from solid starters on down to bottom-level bench players. The rares are particularly rare in NBA Showdown just because there are only 228 cards in the set, as opposed to some larger sets for other games. And, of course, you can't really use multiples of any given card in the set. Pack size was also smaller. You know, there's only 7 player cards in a pack and 2 strategy cards. So that was how they broke down the set in terms of rarity. Anyway, long-winded explanation. I wanted to use a few more of the guys who were deemed rare, a few more of the stars who hadn't gotten used on teams in season one. What this ended up being was kind of interesting. Neither of the guys on the Houston Rockets at the time who were printed at rare, that being their backcourt stars of Steve Francis and Katino Mobley, neither of them had gotten used, had been selected by the app, and neither of the Knicks stars, Allen Houston and Marcus Camby at the time, got used. And finally, none of the Orlando Magic stars, namely Grant Hill and Tracy McGrady, who is the poster boy of the whole game if you look at any of the packaging, neither of them had been used. So I wanted to get all 6 of those guys in. What that led to, I mentioned that the app spit out 11 acceptable teams, including the new parameter regarding teammates, but I did eventually have to work in by hand a couple more of those stars that I just mentioned that I wanted to include, plus a couple others that hadn't got in the first time around, including the Cavs' Andre Miller and a handful of others that we'll get to later in the episode when we start breaking down the teams. But eventually, we got to 12 teams that I was satisfied with for season two. The next thing up that Matt and I puzzled over was what to call these. In season one, we went with the 12 signs of the Western Zodiac. And this time around, I wanted something that there were a neat 12 of. And also, I kind of wanted something in the same vein that is partially mythologically based, doesn't carry too much external meaning. In other words, I wasn't going to select 12 cities or 12 random animals. What we ended up going with was an easy port over to the Eastern Zodiac. So these are the signs from, most people know them as the signs of the Chinese New Year, but this is the Eastern Zodiac. It's used by a number of countries in the East, and the signs for that are rat, ox, tiger, rabbit, dragon, snake, horse, goat, monkey, rooster, dog, and pig. You probably are remembering seeing these on some Chinese restaurant menus and whatnot. That is how they are frequently represented here in the West, but the Chinese New Year is actually of great significance to a number of countries in the East. Anyway, so these were the 12 symbols that we chose to use, and yes, some of them are not quite as flattering or intimidating or tough-sounding for sports team names as the others. I mean, you know, we have rat and monkey and pig here, as well as goat, as opposed to dragon and tiger. So there are some tougher-sounding ones and some less tough-sounding ones, but I do like the tradition associated with them, and I love that it was a nice, clean set of 12. After this, we may be looking at naming teams after months or the Greek pantheon, the Olympian gods. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it, though. Anyway, so season two, we are 12 teams with these additional parameters. We're going to be named after the signs of the Eastern Zodiac. We got our 12 teams. I did my little jatinkering to get a few of the previously unused stars on there. And we have dove right into the games. So you guys listening to this episode can follow along on the blog as I run down these rosters and just make a few comments on them. But I am really pleased with how the teams came out. Sure, there are lots of guys that we used in the first season, but I mean, that's just how it's going to go based on our parameters of having the minimum player value at 450. And always wanting to hit that 5,000. But starting off with Team Rat, this team looked pretty strong to begin with a really great backcourt of Vince Carter and Jason Kidd. The front court features Elton Brand, and then two lower point value guys in Brad Miller and Wally Szczerbiak. Szczerbiak, of note, is a quote-unquote call-up from the Winter League. He was featured on Winter League's Team Green, which actually won the Winter League championship. So there's your first little Winter League call-up right there. Rat will get a little bit into the early results in a little while because we are about halfway through the season, but Rat certainly looked strong with Jason Kidd able to pump out those assists to feed into Vince Carter and score the points. Next up is Team Ox. Another great backcourt here between Jerry Stackhouse and Gary Payton. Stackhouse's card has a really friendly, I would say, chart in that it starts with assists down low on the chart. You don't have to roll terribly high to start getting assists. And even on just his second tier result, he scores 6 points. It's very reflective of how Jerry played. Right around this time, his last season with the Pistons and his first season with the Wizards, when he was really the focal point of those teams' offenses. I believe he put up 29 points per game in one of the real seasons, but Stackhouse's card has performed really, really well in all of the seasons I've used it in, which has been all now that I think about it, including the proto season. So yeah, GP and Stack in the backcourt, and then the front court, similarly has a high-value power forward in Antonio McDice, and at center is Akeem the Dream, Olajuwon, again, in his Raptors days, so past his prime, and Ruben Patterson at the small forward spot, somebody that I hadn't used yet in any of the seasons, including Winter League. So Ox, again, looking pretty strong, great backcourt, and that is where you see a lot of the production come out of these teams, just because of the importance of assists in the game. Team Tiger, up next, is constructed a little bit differently. They are very top-heavy with a center and power forward combination of Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett. After that, you've got Mike Bibby at point guard to hopefully help facilitate their offense. The small forward and shooting guard spots are where they kind of cut corners with just Donyell Marshall and Michael Dickerson. Dickerson, of note, is another one of our, quote, call-ups from the Winter League. Had a decent season there. I believe he was on, I want to say, Team Orange. Anyway, so that is the starting five for Tiger. A lot hinges there on their two big guys, Duncan and Garnett. You would really need, I think, with a team like this, for one of those two guys needs to shine each night. Hopefully they've got the facilitation again with Bibby. We'll get into, again, some of their early results in just a bit. But with more of our overviews, we go to Team Rabbit. This is another top-heavy team, even more so than Tiger. Here you've got Alonzo Mourning at center, Chris Webber at power forward, and Sharif Abdurrahim at small forward. So all three of the front court positions, you've got a higher point value guy. The lowest there is Reef at 890. And then a sort of budget backcourt between Aaron McKee and Steve Nash. McKee, notable as a call-up from the Winter League, and Nash is notable as the point guard from last season's champion, Team Scorpio. He helped Scorpio win the Season 1 championship. Anyway, this is another interesting-looking team. Between all three of those front-court players, you figure one of them's got to have a decent game, and boy, they're going to dominate the glass from the looks of it. And one nice thing about having McKee and Nash in the backcourt, yeah, both are lower point value, but both do very much focus on assists when you look at their charts. And McKee was always known as a facilitator in his playing days, so Rabbit is kind of a wild card. We shall see how that particular mix breaks down. Team Dragon is up next, and they are another interesting one. This is a far more balanced squad. We don't have anybody above the 1,000 point level, and we don't have anybody below 660. The star here is going to be Grant Hill, who we didn't get to see in Season 1, but Grant's card is just superb up and down the chart. And he's got good stats to back it up as well. I believe in the proto season, we didn't see him in Season 1, but I believe in the proto season, he led the league in triple-doubles. So he, much like in his playing days, is a threat for that. The interesting thing is that they printed Grant's card very much at, you know, Grant's skill level. They didn't print it to reflect all of the really very sad injury woes that he had during his Magic years and later in his career. Of course, he was very much able to put together some great later years with the Suns, but those years with the Magic were, a couple of them were entirely lost. Anyway, so the card performs well, even though Grant had those struggles. Elsewhere on the team, you've got a front court that will really clean the glass with Dikembe Mutombo and Marcus Camby. Camby is another new appearance. These are in his Knicks playing days. And the backcourt is a couple of Millers, Reggie and Andre. Andre is yet again another new addition. Andre Miller's card is very focused on assists, just like the player was during his playing days, all about facilitation. And Reggie Miller, I tell you, in Season 1, he definitely seemed to punch above his weight class. And a little bit of a spoiler, he's doing so again for Team Dragon, though they have been a little bit of an up-and-down team. So that's Dragon. Onwards to Snake. Here you're going to, I'll just immediately reveal our genius. Yeah, we put Kobe Bryant here. The Black Mamba is on Team Snake. around Kobe, we put point guard Eric Snow, call up from the Winter League, very much an assist producer, but a budget one, in that he is a lower point value. Jalen Rose at the small forward, very much an assist-focused player. He was known to be sort of a point forward, especially in his days as a Pacer, which is when these cards were printed. Then you got Dirk Nowitzki, Matt's favorite of all time, at the power forward spot, and Theo Ratliff, somebody we didn't see in season one. These are during his Hawks playing days. Ratliff is at center. So this is a team that looks like they've got a good amount of assist production to support Kobe. Eric Snow being a, you know, like all of 450 right at the minimum point value for starters, that could be a little bit suspect. The good news is that he starts with assists right down at the bottom of his chart. So I think if they get some production from Snow, just, you know, sort of a decent, consistent amount of assists, they'll be able to crank out a lot of points as well between Kobe, Dirk, and Jalen. Onwards to Team Horse. This is another more balanced squad with the top end at 1,000 points, but the bottom end is on down to 460. Those two players are Karl Malone at the top end and Patrick Ewing at the center spot. This is during his Magic playing days. So there's your two big guys. At small forward, you have Rashard Lewis, somebody we didn't see around in season one. This is during his Sonics days, so it was really before his prime when he was playing with the Dwight Howard Magic a few years later. And then the backcourt is really quite strong between Michael Finley and Stephon Marbury. Marbury had a decent season one. His team didn't really put together much of a run. Finley also had kind of an up and down season one. Now they have joined forces here, and it's a pretty well-rounded team. Rashard Lewis's card is a little bit interesting in that it is, his chart seems to be focused on consistency as opposed to any kind of breakout. Just consistently pulling down rebounds and scoring points, and then assists are only up at the top of the chart. So Horse will be kind of a wild card. We'll just have to see how they perform as the season goes on. Team Goat. Well, here Shaq rears his ugly head. So anybody who followed season one knows what an incredible beast Shaquille O'Neal was during that season, and Goat is designed to take advantage of him. You've got a power forward of Charles Oakley, guy who just does his job and doesn't get in the way. Small forward of Paul Pierce, who can support, be that secondary scorer, also, you know, fairly balanced chart. Shooting guard is somebody we didn't see in season one. It's one of the Knicks stars, Allen Houston. Houston's card is interesting in that he is printed as a shooting guard / point guard. Now, I never knew Allen Houston to run the point, and I wouldn't trust him running the point here. So he is at the two guard spot, but he can score in bursts, just like he did during his Knicks days. And then at the point guard spot, you got Sam Cassell, who every single time he goes out there, he seems to perform better than his 650-point value. Between scoring a good amount of points and being a very consistent assist producer. So Team Goat definitely looks like a scary one. I mean, any team that features Shaquille O'Neal is going to merit consideration. Hopefully they aren't too oppressive. I don't know if they will live up to the greatest of all time acronym there. Onwards to Team Monkey. Team Monkey is more focused on the front court between the two Antoines at power forward and small forward. Interesting that they would later go on to be teammates on the Mavs. Antoine Jameson at power forward and Antoine Walker at small forward, even though both guys are printed as tweener forwards, small forward, power forward. So technically they can switch, but this is how I have them set, just because Twan Walker has the higher speed and Jameson has the higher power. At center, they've got David Robinson. Shooting guard, new appearance, Katina Mobley. So we got Cat during his Rockets playing days, printed as a star here. And Travis Best is their point guard. Best is a guy that we haven't seen yet. He's at printed at only 460 point value, but Monkey has to hope that they, you know, get a sufficient amount of assists out of him to really provide the facilitation for that top-heavy front court between the two Antons. After Team Monkey, we move on to Team Rooster, which I like the looks of a lot at this point. So the focus here is definitely going to be on the backcourt. It's featuring the answer in the franchise, Allen Iverson at shooting guard and Steve Francis at point guard. So that is a heck of a lot of points and assists right there. It's also a lot of your point value between Iverson being 1,000 and franchise being 1030, but couldn't resist putting those two next to each other, and franchise, of course, being a new appearance. At center, we have a Winter League call-up, Rafe LaFrance. Juwan Howard is actually another Winter League call-up at small forward. And then your power forward is Rasheed Wallace. Wallace seems to underperform for an 870-point value. We're seeing some of that in Season 2 and testing it some more as the season progresses. But it's interesting as we play more and more games, how we noticed that certain players just ended up printed stronger than others at similar point values. Anyway, Rooster is definitely a team to watch with a backcourt that features so much firepower between AI and franchise. I think that in certain games, they will be able to just carry that team. Team Dog is the epitome of balance. This team, I mentioned that the Dragon looked a little bit more balanced and that Horse looked a little bit more balanced. This team takes it to an extreme of having no player above 880 in point value and no player below 720. So this would indicate both that they don't give up a whole lot in terms of having major weaknesses, but they also don't have like one guy to hang their hat on and really count on to produce. So will be interesting to see how they play. The guys on the team, you got Danny Fortson at center. He's a new appearance. Keith Van Horn at power forward. Lamar Odom at small forward. Ray Allen at shooting guard. And Van Exel at point guard. Nick Van Exel. So that backcourt for sure looks pretty potent. Good amount of scoring. Ray Allen's card, just like the player in real life, especially during his Bucks days, is just maddeningly consistent. Able to score and provide a little help on rebounds and assists as well. Van Exel is another scorer at the point guard spot, but also pretty consistent assist producer. Odom, much like his playing days, does a little bit of everything. And Fort Dog up there, he definitely focuses on the rebounding. One of the wild cards here will be Keith Van Horn. He started out really hot in Season 1 and then cooled off. At 740 point value, he's another guy that you would kind of hope for a little bit more, maybe like a double-double. But just the way his chart plays out, that doesn't happen too often. So Dog will be a team to watch, especially with such a unique construction of all the starters being within this narrow band of point values. Part of me really loves the idea of balance and not giving up anything at any of the positions, but I know that sometimes a star getting hot is what it takes to take down a game. Finally, on to Team Pig. Speaking of stars, here's Tracy McGrady. This is where we found a home for him. He is a 1,150 point value player, so not the highest in the entire set, but they did choose him to be the poster boy of the product. He's on all the booster packs and the playmat and the starter set. You see him everywhere that NBA Showdown 2002 is. His card is definitely super powerful. It's got really high stats with 14 speed and 13 power. Surrounding McGrady, you've got Rip Hamilton at shooting guard. This is during his Wizards playing days, right before he got traded to the Pistons. And Terrell Brandon at point guard. Brandon being a guy who really had just bad luck all season one long. So hoping for a bounce back here with Team Pig. Antonio Davis is at the center spot. This is another guy we didn't see in Season 1. And then Clarence Weatherspoon at power forward. So that's Team Pig very much relying on McGrady and hoping that Terrell Brandon can pump out enough assists and doesn't face the same string of bad luck that he did in Season 1. So now, early results, which I have alluded to so far. We've played about half the games, and what it looks like right now is that GOAT with Shaquille O'Neal is looking mighty strong. At the halfway point, they sit at 8 wins and 3 losses, but they are tied with Team Rabbit. So Team Rabbit was, as I mentioned, a more top-heavy team with Zoe, Chris Webber, and Sharif Abdur-Rahim as their front court stars. So those two teams are at 8-3. That's a one-game lead over three teams who sit at 7-4. It's Team Rat, Team Ox, and Team Monkey. Team Rat, again, is the team with Vince Carter and Jason Kidd in the backcourt. Ox features another great backcourt between Gary Payton and Jerry Stackhouse. The Monkey is one of the more top-heavy teams, having the two Twans, Antoine Jamison and Antoine Walker, plus David Robinson at the center spot. So we're seeing a variety of makeups of teams here. GOAT featuring the one massive star in Shaq, Rabbit being one of the top-heavy teams, Rat and Ox featuring star backcourts, Monkey being top-heavy. So a variety of teams experiencing success, but notably, none of those teams that I mentioned being super balanced. Rooster is in the sixth spot in the standings at the halfway point. They're 6-5, so just above 500. They've had some up and down games, but that backcourt is every bit as good as advertised. The one thing is the lack of production at the center spot from Rafe LaFrance and also at power forward from Rasheed Wallace. As I mentioned, that card just ended up as it's printed, not quite as powerful as an 870 point value would indicate. After that, we got two teams at 5-6. That's Team Tiger and Team Dragon. Tiger was another front-heavy team that has Tim Duncan at center and Kevin Garnett at power forward. They very much have lived and died by those two guys, just not getting a lot of production from the small forward or shooting guard spots. Bibby has done his job for sure. Team Dragon at 5-6, they've been a little bit of a mystery. Grant Hill has absolutely shined, had multiple triple-doubles. But that front court of, or specifically their two power players of Dikembe Mutombo and Marcus Camby, they crank out rebounds like crazy, but they cannot score to save their lives. So a lot depends on how Grant Hill and also Reggie Miller being kind of their secondary scorer. A lot depends on how those two guys can do when it comes to Team Dragon's performance. Following that, two teams at 4-7. That's Team Horse and Team Dog. I mentioned them as more balanced teams, and the sort of pitfall of not having one star to really go out there and put up a lot of points, that seems to be biting these two teams. Dog, in the games that they play well, they look unstoppable. When, you know, maybe three of their five guys are clicking and the other guys are just out there doing their jobs, they look good. But other than that, if nobody is really having a particularly strong game, it's almost guaranteed that the opposing team will have somebody playing well, and that is frequently enough to put them down, considering they just don't have a ton of production at any of the given spots. Horse just hasn't looked good, period, to be honest. Rashard Lewis's card is a lot weaker than you would expect a 690-point value guy to be. And despite having a pretty solid backcourt of Finley and Marbury, it's really not enough to make up for that. And Karl Malone, his card is also probably a little bit underpowered. Keep in mind, this was towards the end of his playing days, but still, at a 1,000-point value, you expect a little bit more. The last two teams rounding out are Team Pig at 3-8 and Team Snake at 2-9. So Pig has honestly looked pretty bad. McGrady has had very few good games. It's not entirely his fault. A lot of his roles have been low, but Terrell Brandon provides little to no support. Clarence Weatherspoon is a little bit of a black hole when it comes to just gobbling up assists and not really doing a whole lot with them. Antonio Davis has been a solid performer. He can certainly pull down rebounds and score in bunches, but not anything special. So Pig has struggled to get any W's. Same for Snake. Snake has also had pretty atrocious luck between Kobe and Eric Snow going cold multiple times. But in general, I'm not sure if that makeup is really going to work. We'll see if they have a second half push. Certainly hoping for it, just rooting for Dirk there. But it's going to take a pretty consistent performance from Kobe, and either Rose or Snow needs to show up and really crank out some assists to provide some assistance. They're also kind of weak on the boards with Dirk not being a guaranteed double-double, and neither is Theo Ratliff here. So that is the bottom feeder right there with Team Snake. On to the league leaders. We don't see a lot of surprises in terms of who's up at the top, except there are some notable omissions because of the bad luck that some guys are experiencing. For scoring, we've got the same top three right now at the halfway point of Season 2 that finished in the top three for Season 1. We have The Answer, Jerry Stackhouse, and Shaquille O'Neal. So all three of these guys are averaging more than 30. One other guy is also averaging more than 30. That's Grant Hill from Team Dragon. But AI is in the lead with 36.2 points per game. Stackhouse, a fair shake behind him at 34.3, and then Shaq and Grant Hill both at 31.3 and 31.2, so neck and neck. The rest of that top 10 looks like Kobe Bryant at 29.9, just shy of that 30. So despite some bad luck, still able to pump out points. And Chris Webber having probably an above-average season, averaging 29.2 per game. Now, Paul Pierce comes up next at 28.6, so that's another guy from Team Goat making an appearance. That definitely, is an indication as to why they might be winning games as they are, just having that raw production from Shaq and Pierce. Then, following that, you got Vince Carter from Team Rat, 28.5. Ray Allen from Team Dog, despite their struggles, he is averaging 28 a game. And then Alonzo Mourning from Team Rabbit. So that's your second guy from Rabbit. Zoe is averaging 27.4. So that's the top 10 in scoring. AI, Stackhouse, O'Neal, Grant Hill, Kobe, C-Web, Paul Pierce, Vince Carter, Ray Allen, and Zoe. An interesting mix. When I mention guys who are notably missing, note that Tracy McGrady's not there. That is, like I was saying, just a guy who's had pretty bad luck so far this season. Onward to the rebounding leaders. I mentioned that Team Dragon, that their front court at the very least could clean the boards. Well, that's certainly true. They've got two of the top five. Number one spot going to Marcus Camby from Dragon. He averages 14.4 boards per game. Following him is Shaq from Team Goat. No surprises here. 14.3 boards per game. Danny Fortson from Team Dog is in third at 14.2. So all three of those guys really neck and neck for the lead in rebounding. And then our other guy from Dragon in the top five is Dikembe Mutombo at 13.8. Then the second guy from Goat shows up in the top five at the fifth spot with Charles Oakley at 13.3. Following him, Antonio McDyess at 12.9. At the seventh spot, Tim Duncan, Team Tiger at 12.7. Mentioned their woes, but Duncan is still putting together a very solid season. A super consistent guy, just like he was in his playing days. After that, you got Alonzo Mourning, first of two guys from Team Rabbit on this list. The other one is right after him, and it's Chris Webber at 12.4. So a lot of rebound production from those two guys. And finally, rounding out the top 10 is Antonio Davis of Team Pig, 12.1. So a lot of guys averaging a lot of rebounds here. In Season 1, we had guys who were, you know, below the 12 rebound per game mark on this top 10 list, but not so this time around. Got three guys averaging more than 14 boards per game. So got some teams that really dominate the glass and kind of attack the game that way. So that, you know, that being Team Dragon, Team Goat, Team Rabbit, all these teams have multiple guys on this list. So interesting to see that breakdown and sort of that variance between the seasons that we've got so many guys up there in rebounds here. Assists, not so much. Guys are not pumping out assists the way that they did in Season 1. That being said, we do have Gary Payton averaging double figures. He's at 10.4 assists per game for Team Ox. Definitely one of the reasons that they are winning games at the clip that they are. Again, 7-4. Payton, also notably, 25.8 points per game. A well-rounded player just like he was in his playing days. Andre Miller follows him at 9.2 dimes per game. A fair shake back from Payton. After him, you got Mike Bibby at 8.9. So, again, looking at less assist production across the league. Just some statistical variance here between this and Season 1. Following Bibby is a guy that you thought might be a little higher. That's Jason Kidd at 8.7. He hasn't had any real standout games in the first half of the season. We'll have to see how that shakes out in the second half. But still a solid, well-balanced stat line and a reason that Team Rat is one of those 7-4 teams. Next up is Stephon Marbury, a Team Horse at 8.5. He's got a slight edge based on a single-game high over Sam Cassell of Team Goat, who's averaging 8.5. So this is kind of one of the things that we looked at as being kind of dangerous for Team Goat, is that we saw how great Shaq performed with even a lower value point guard, a guy who doesn't crank out quite as many assists in Steve Nash in Season 1, and now in Season 2 we got a guy who cranks out even more assists to feed into the diesel. So that's Sam Cassell of Goat at 8.5. Following him is Eric Snow of Team Snake. Mentioned that he's gone cold a few times, but assists start popping up very low on his chart. So he's got 8.3 dimes per game. Pretty solid. Nick Van Exel follows him, Nick the Quick being on Team Dog. 8.1 assists per game. And then you got two guys who actually are below the 8 assist mark, but still make this top 10. And one of them is, interestingly, the only point guard, the only non-point guard on this list. That's Grant Hill from Team Dragon. He averages 7.6 assists per game. His whole stat line is worth a read, even if Dragon is not seeing a ton of success right now. He's averaging, again, that 31.2 points per game. Also 9.4 rebounds and 7.6 assists. So ranked number 4 in scoring in the league at the halfway point and 9th in assists. So pretty impressive. Mentioned his card is great from top to bottom. Finally is Terrell Brandon. He's averaging 7.5 assists per game. Again, he's not quite the performer that you would expect from an 810 player value card. I mean, you can just compare him to Mike Bibby, who's way higher on this list, but averaging the same amount of points at 16.7, plus a little bit extra on the rebounds. So that's an interesting variance that you see. It certainly, there's a lot of elegance to how the charts play out. Notably, on just this comparison, you've got Terrell Brandon with excellent stats of 19 speed and 5 power. Bibby at much more regular stats, pedestrian stats of 15 speed and 5 power, but just having a more friendly chart with more production at lower results on the roll leads to greater production overall. So that is our standings and some overviews of the rosters, as well as our league leaders at the halfway point of Season 2. So some impressions from Season 2. I'd love to see this kind of variance. This is, you know, exactly what I was hoping for over the course of however many seasons we get to do. I just love to analyze the differences and how guys, when paired with other players or just facing bad streaks, how they perform. You see lots of consistency. Again, you know, we got the same top three scorers, but just look at the top 10 in rebounding and the top 10 in assists and their overall numbers and where certain guys fall, and you definitely see that it's not going to play out the same way each time. Of course, you know, the game is based on variance, based on that D20 role, but it's very cool to see how well the developers did at simulating basketball and at getting guys' numbers to line up with how they produced, you know, at these points in their careers. So, super much enjoying it. The standings as they stand, I would say I'm a little bit surprised. I wouldn't have put Team Monkey as high as they are, and I would have said that both Snake and Pig were better than they are. That's why we play the games, I guess. We'll see if GOAT continues to dominate going forward. We will be diving in to the second half of the season going forward and providing some updates. In the meantime, I am working on getting ready for a second run through the Winter League, and we will almost assuredly be doing at least one more regular season following this. So eventually we will be getting on to Season 3, but in the meantime, we're cranking out the rest of these games in Season 2 and seeing which of these teams takes down the championship. Pretty soon, I may be having an opportunity to jump on another podcast. Two of my buddies, Brad and Rob, they've had their podcast, Sink and Assist, up for a while now, and we've been talking about a collaboration. I will be sure to post on Facebook and on Twitter when that happens, whenever, if it happens. Right now, we're eyeing the beginning of January for an episode that I would jump on. We got a bunch of stuff that we want to talk about, but if you guys are interested in that podcast, definitely check it out. Again, that's Sync, S-Y-N-C, and Assist. You can find them pretty much everywhere, including iTunes, Spotify, everywhere that you find me, you can find them, plus a few other places you can find them. So that's just a little teaser for you guys. Other than that, make sure you follow us on Facebook, NBA Showdown League, and follow me on Twitter at DirtyCurdy27, DirtyCurdy27. And of course, check out the blog at NBASL.wordpress.com. In the meantime, I hope you have enjoyed this catch-up on Season 2. We'll continue cranking out those games, and we'll provide an update on the stats and standings once we reach the end of the season and are ready for those playoffs. So thanks again for listening. This is John the Commish signing off.